All right, here we are in Bloomington with Mayor Hamilton. Thank you so much for having us again for our monthly Ask the Mayor.
Of course, Joe. Nice to see you again.
A busy time of the year, August in Bloomington, of course, with all the students coming back and construction, maybe some construction projects kind of wrapping up. What's your message to all these new students coming back?
Well, watch the one-way streets, drive carefully, but welcome to town. I actually was with a group of 100 of them this morning, freshmen from all over the state and the country, and it's exciting to have the energy and anticipation and that all those fresh faces come to town. It's a big time of year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, I mean, it was kind of a rough weekend nationally with the violent clashes that erupted in Charlottesville, Virginia, did prompt some peace rallies across the country, including here in Bloomington. Hundreds showed up Sunday evening at the courthouse. How do city officials respond in these kind of trying moments in terms of turning these violent protests into something peaceful?
Well, Joe, it's another example of the Bloomington community, the fabric of Bloomington that responds. I was very proud to see all the people of our community come together. What happened in Charlottesville, and that's the latest episode of a hateful, terrible movement that is trying to take America backwards and spew racism and bile and vile, and it's just a terrible movement that erupted there. And my sympathies go to the people of Charlottesville, the mayor there. That's a tough situation. I'm sure they'll get through it. I'm sure the good people of Charlottesville will prevail. But it's reminds you that we have work to do in the communities around the country and in the country to overcome some hateful ideologies, racism, white supremacism. I thank our governor for speaking out on it. I certainly stand directly in opposition, as do the vast majority of Bloomingtonians. That's not our future. It's a bad part of our past, and we need to get past it.
I thought we'd get a few updates on some other more local areas of interest. You did update the public on the progress of the Safety, Civility, Justice Task Force, recommendations on keeping the Shalom Center open on weekends, some web portals, follow-up committees, and that was about 3 weeks ago or so. And there have been some fundraising efforts, too, that have come in, I think, surpassed the goal.
Yes. We got a number of recommendations actually kind of rolling in over the last 6 months about safety and civility and what we need to do downtown, some ideas, community-based efforts. A lot of those are being implemented. Just last few weeks we implemented some more, and I decided to try, one of the recommendations was to open Shalom Center over the weekend. Right now it's just Monday to Friday, 8 to 4. There was evidence that when Shalom is open, there's less street crime, stress, issues, so there was a recommendation that Shalom ought to try opening over the weekend. That cost, we found out, about $65,000, and I decided to try to appeal a little wider to the community, to the county, to the business community, and to the city, to split that three ways. I'm very pleased that all three of us have stepped up to do that, and in fact, the business community has gone beyond that. We've had almost, really, more than double that request committed. And I'm very pleased that I think it shows people want to focus on solutions, help our fellow residents, and help our community move in the direction we want.
Any date or plan on opening the center on weekends as of yet?
I know Shalom is actually working right now to recruit the people. They need to staff up. They need to figure out some of the logistics. I expect it'll be in the next month or two that they'll open up. It's really in their hands. They know they're going to get the funding now, and we appreciate the role they play, and they just kind of have to get the design put in place, and it's really meant to be a year experiment, and let's see if it makes a difference.
Now, there's also been a growing response from area businesses contributing funds to keep activities happening at the People's Park area too, and that's a strategy you talked about way back, I think in the spring, on just keeping the park busy enough to keep out illegal activity. So I assume that you're pretty impressed at the response of the businesses jumping in to help fund these initiatives?
You know, I am pleased, Joe. We've worked with the businesses all the time on lots of these issues. This is more visible than usual. And I do want to thank them for being full partners in this. People's Park, we're going to have active programming in that park every day between now and the end of September. And that's a good thing to just keep activity in the park, from chess to music to other physical events and other things like that. You know, it also struck me over the weekend, Nick's English Hut celebrated its 90th anniversary. We had a big street party, shut down a part of Kirkwood for 8 hours, I think. And that's another way to activate downtown. So the business community, full partners in trying to help make sure this community works for everybody.
I see in the Herald Times this week, the city made an offer to purchase the Creamery building next to City Hall right here. And I think another building nearby as well. Is that officially moving forward?
Well, it's a good question, Joe. The Redevelopment Commission, which is kind of a quasi-governmental entity, made a couple offers on those. They're not binding offers. They're not committing the Redevelopment Commission to move forward, even if the offer's accepted. We can study, we can look. I think, you know, around the Trades District, there's no doubt there's going to be development of different things happening, different investments. And as the Redevelopment Commission focuses on that core Trades District, it makes sense to look at properties that are right around it. The Johnson Creamery is a historic building. It's right next to the Showers building. It may make sense. We don't know yet whether it makes sense to do that. Just like we're looking around Switchyard Park, as the properties around that, how do we want to steer their development? This is not about taking property out of private hands. It's really trying to help steer development into things that we think mix well with the big public investment at Switchyard Park or at the Trades District.
Does the city have a separate budget to be able to go out and buy?
The Redevelopment Commission does have a separate budget from funds that they amass over the years. That's kind of how they're designed to receive tax increment financing dollars. That's the money that's basically helping pay for the Switchyard Park to buy that and to do the Trades District. So it's kind of ancillary properties nearby related to those developments. Now the Johnson Creamery has a special interest because it's so close to City Hall and a great historic downtown building. And we just wanted to take a look at it and see what that might offer for the future.
So speaking of budgets, I see you released the 2018 budget. Now hearings are continuing throughout the week. I took a quick look, it's 315 pages, so we don't have time okay. to go through every page
of
the budget, but from what I remember in past, and many mayors say this too, the budget doesn't change too much. There's always the essentials. You don't have a ton of extra money to go out and do a bunch of different things, but there are a couple different initiatives in this upcoming budget.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about those?
Sure. So Monday night, we proposed the budget, and there's a week of hearings that are kind of informal hearings, and then the ultimate budget hearing will be in September and the vote on it with the council. But a couple things for 2018 that might be worth noting. Apart, we're doing major investments in public safety and economic development and housing and some of those core things we do, but a couple that are a little unusual. One is the bicentennial. The city turns 200 in 2018, and I wanted our budget to incorporate some resources to help us invest, pay it forward, if you will. So I put an ask for $250,000 for bicentennial activities, to be determined, really. A second, first time ever, I asked the city council to consider early education support. We have hundreds of kids in the city who aren't getting as good a start as they could. The city can't answer all that, but we can play a part working with the Community Foundation. We hope to get some new state money. But I think it's an appropriate thing to have in the city budget that we are supporting and helping the youngest residents that we have get a good start in the city. So I asked for about $100,000 just to put our toe in that. That's not a lot of money in that field, but it's the first time we've done it. I think only Indianapolis in the state does that kind of general fund support for early education. I think it's a good step to take.
The bicentennial, I mean, next year, I assume, is the committee is working on that? Things are starting to come together?
We do have, there are people meeting. The county turns 2018, the same, this 200 years old, the same year. So we in the county are working together on that. IU, of course, turns 200 2 years later. So we're actually talking to them about all this. And it's trying to think about, you know, we inherited a beautiful, great city, and what can we do to help pass that along? And so there's a lot of people thinking about that. We didn't make any big announcements about the substance of it, but in the budget, it reflects that this is something we ought to think about investing in.
Any updates on the annexation lawsuit or anything new with that?
The wheels of justice turn slowly, but yeah, they continue to turn.
Yeah.
I think there will be a hearing in September. That will be the first formal court proceeding with both parties and the judge, and we are urging quick resolution of this issue. We don't think it's a complicated trial. It's just, let's figure out what the law says about this. But so that's going to keep going. It'll take a little while.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about deer in a while too on this show, and earlier this month, the Griffey Nature Lake Preserve Deer Management had a panel. They were talking about, it was interesting, at least to me, on how they were measuring the length of vegetation compared to other parks to determine if there is an overpopulation of deer. What is your opinion of the deer population, and does something need to be done about it?
Well, it's true. We haven't had a lot of conversation about deer. There are really two deer conversations in Bloomington. One deer conversation is about the Lake Griffey Nature Preserve and the impact of deer on that public land that is a nature preserve. And let me come back to that in a second. The second deer conversation is really about urban deer all through the city, private land, spreading out through our community, eating gardens, having fawns in your backyard. And those are two really different conversations. I think they're both going on, but the one that's got some timing on it right now is the first one about Lake Griffey Nature Preserve. And I have always felt that as a mayor overseeing a nature preserve, publicly owned for the future generations, my responsibility is to follow the science that tells us how to make it a nature preserve, how to preserve the nature. That's the science that right now is counseling, as you've said, that we've got real deer overpopulation that's damaging that nature preserve, the diversity in the nature preserve. And I'm going to keep listening to the science, and based on their recommendation, you know, we'll do what we should do from the scientific perspective to protect that nature preserve. The urban deer is a really different question, and I've really encouraged. I know the city council is conversations with different neighborhoods. There are different issues in different neighborhoods, and I think that's less right now, less kind of science biology based, and more almost sociology, personality. What kind of city do we want?
Let's see. Sun Development and Management been hired too since we've last talked for the convention center expansion. Step one or two of 80, right, is still very, very early in that process. What's the next step?
Well, Joe, I'm a big supporter of the value of an anchor convention center, conference center, civic center in downtown Bloomington. We have a beautiful downtown, a dynamic downtown, a strong downtown, and part of the future of that is continuing to have people in that downtown. So since I got into this office, I've been a proponent of an expansion of that convention center. We have taken a few steps that are important. It's going to be up to the county to decide next, I think, how looking at funding sources for that. And I hope that happens in the next 3 months or so. The most likely source is a food and beverage tax, which the county will need to decide to put in place. It's something many counties around the state do have. And I think it's a smart thing for us. We'll look forward to further discussion on that in the months ahead. And I'm going to be a proponent and hope we can work with the county on putting that in place to get what will be, I think, a great anchor downtown to expand that convention center.
Does the legislature have to give Monroe County permission for that food and beverage
That is
tax?
A good question, and they do not. We already have permission under state law to put in place a food and beverage tax.
In other news, IU Health released the renderings of the new Bloomington Hospital. As that project moved forward, a couple concerns. I think the one is everyone always talks about is the traffic mixing in that area. And of course, you have the former hospital area that the city, and at least in the past, more of the past, has been trying to come up with helping to get that developed. Any updates from the city on those two kind of public concerns about this whole hospital relocation?
Well, we can take deep breaths on both of those. We have plenty of time. You know, having a major $400 million investment for a new hospital, new academic center is a great thing for the community. It's right on a major road. Yes, people think about football home days. The few days that we have like that a year are something to pay attention to. I do remind people that, hey, these other people get to use their sirens to go around that traffic, which you don't get to use when you're in that traffic. And I know there are a lot of people looking at how that infrastructure will work, access from the bypass, and also from the east and other directions. And I'm confident we'll get that figured out, and IU Health will too. On the current site, the current hospital site, that's still really kind of an open question, how that process. We know we'll have an extensive community process to think about what that should be after 2021 and later when that property may become available. It's privately owned, the most of it right now, by IU Health and by other physicians and medical offices. So stay tuned to that. There's a lot of conversations going on that, but we have several years to think about what do we want that to be. It's a great opportunity for the community.
And the state finalizes the contract of I-69, yes. The full takeover, I believe, on Monday. Have you been in any talks with NDOT and foresee any upcoming trouble or positive news on this?
Well, I have communicated back and forth with Joe McGinnis, the head of the Transportation Department. I do think it's a good thing that they've taken it back. I wish they'd done it a year and a half ago. But NDOT needed to take this back. They know how to build a highway. Let's get it done. I've driven back and forth a few times over the last few weeks. I do think activity levels are up. We still are awaiting from NDOT the full build detailed schedule that we want to see to know that they're staying on track. They have opened up two lanes both directions for this 30-day period when students are arriving and parents coming in and out of town, when the football season starts and those Columbus fans from Ohio drive into town. NDOT has followed their procedures that they told us they would to open up four lanes, so that's good. But we still have work ahead of us. You know, the delay went to August 2018 now. It's pushed another 3 months. But I've got Joe McGinnis on my speed dial, and we're going to keep in contact with them.